We're starting our Binyan HaBayit class, and tonight we're going to discuss a few things. Let's begin. It was electrifying. We stood across from one another on the dance floor, and suddenly I just knew that we were meant to be together. These were the words of this young woman. She said, and ever since then it just took off. One date after another, we went to the movies, we went to the dance, we spent the afternoons eating popcorn together, running through the park, rollerblading, ice skating, and before I knew it, we were engaged. Electrifying. Much of what we see when we look at commercials, at TV, on the bus, we see people describing love, and the question is, what do they mean? Just because a person feels like something's electrifying or they're attracted doesn't mean that they love, and that doesn't mean it's going to work. People think, if you love me, you'll do this for me. We once gave out a piece of paper in which everyone filled out what they expect to give their wife, what they expect to get from their wives. There were many questions along those natures. You remember, Ephraim, right? I still have the papers, right? Let me tell you about a guy who performed bris milas. You guys might figure out who this guy is. And he did his own son's bris, and there was a complication in the middle of the bris, and someone came up to him after the bris and said, how are you able to keep your cool? I mean, the guy told him, you know, I did my own son's bris, and something, there was a complication in the middle, and I just froze. I couldn't continue. How are you able to continue? And the guy said, I don't know. I just did what I had to do. And then this guy had a child that was born prematurely, and the kid was stuck in the hospital for a while. 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks. After a month, the kid gets out, and suddenly he's faced with having to do a bris milah to his child. And suddenly it's a totally different story. Now, we're accustomed to a world describing love as getting. If you love me, then you'll do this for me. And we have to get accustomed to knowing that love grows from giving. It's true that one of the products is that you receive, but it's a byproduct. That's not the main point. We mentioned once the story about the mother who, during World War II, was separated from her child for a few years. She had a newborn child, and the child was with the father during the war, and the other children were with the mother. And when they met again, 6 years later, the child was already 6, 7 years old. The mother felt that she doesn't have a connection with that child like she had with all the other children, because the connection we have with things stems from what we invest in them. Our investment in things is part of us. My son's been giving me a really hard time about food lately. Everything I want to give him says, no, I don't want. He's 3 and a half. And I remembered that there was someone I knew, his father, who was the exact same way. And I remembered how his father overcame it. And I did to him what caused me to have a change of heart. I said to him, you know what? I need your help. Help me make lunch. I'll put some ketchup on the bread. You spread it. I'll give you the cheese. You put it on. And when he made that sandwich, after he spent 10 minutes putting the ketchup on, you know, for a 3-year-old, it's not so simple to smear ketchup on a sandwich, he gobbled that sandwich down. Suddenly, it was very delicious. Why? Because he invested in the sandwich. If we invest in something, then we feel part of it. If we have our children interested in keeping their rooms clean, if they're the ones cleaning it up, they're going to be more careful not to get it messy, unless they don't mind cleaning it up. But if we clean up after them, so, okay, I'm playing, you know, you make a mess when you play. When we approach marriage, so we have to know that in order for it to work, we have to be compatible. And part of what happens when people date today is that they look for distractions. They go to places where they'll be distracted. They'll go to a movie. They'll go roller skating. They'll go bike riding. You're there, I'm here. Even if we ride side by side, there isn't that much conversation. When we're married, so then we're also going to have a lot of things that we do together. But in order for there to be true love, we have to be compatible not only when there are distractions. We have to be compatible to have compatible aspirations and perspectives. And in essence, we have to be compatible on a spiritual level, on an idealistic level. Not just that we both like to dance to this tune, or we both like hot chocolate or whatever it is that's external. There has to be things that are internal, things that are, call them spiritual or call them psychological. There has to be matching that is not given to externals. That's what Chazal told us. Love that's contingent on something external won't last. That doesn't mean that if someone marries someone and he's a very nice guy, and then 3 months after the marriage it turns out he's a bum, that's supposed to work. I mean, you have to make it work. Most people after they marry discover that they married a bum. It goes both ways. But that's because there are a lot of things we don't know about one another when we get married. But when we want to know if there's true attraction, we have to check out if it's narcissistic or not.
What?
Is it focused on me? Is it focused on the other person? Yeah. And part of wanting to give someone else is to want to give on their terms and to want to give when they don't deserve it. There's a saying that they say to teachers, a child needs your love the most when they deserve it the least. And it's also true about spouses. We once had a class where the first 20 minutes was giving scenarios of difficult situations, true scenarios that spouses had. We'll give one example. The wife tells her husband, "You've had a grueling day today. Do me a favor, don't drive. You know you hardly slept yesterday. You know you hardly slept today. Don't drive. And for sure, don't pick up the kids. Take a taxi. Do whatever it has to be done, but don't drive." And the guy says, "Yeah, but I'm okay. I had a nap on the bus home." And she says, "No, do me a favor, don't drive. I have to go out. Do me a favor, don't drive." He does drive. And there's an accident. One of the children is wounded badly. True story. A couple has to live after that. And that's only one story. We could go on like we did then, but I don't see a point. We have to be prepared in life to recognize that we're not perfect, the other person isn't perfect. We pay heavy prices for what we do wrong, and the other side pays heavy prices, and together we pay heavy prices. And being able to love a person is being able to give on their terms, and even when they're wrong. A good example to think about is a child. When we have a child, we don't say, "You know what? If he burnt down the house, I don't love him anymore. He was playing with matches, he burnt down the house." So what do you say? You say, I got to do better to teach him not to play with matches. I got to keep the matches away from him. But you don't say, "Because he was playing with matches, I don't love the kid anymore. I disown him. He did something stupid. He did something dangerous. He might have even done something harmful. But he's still my child." One of the problems we have in today's marriages is that we feel like it's finite, or it's potentially finite. And that in and of itself is lethal to a marriage. In marriage, we have to approach it as it's infinite. That's it. We're together. Chazal told us that when we view marriage, we don't view it as 1 plus 1 equals 2. But rather, we view it as a half plus a half equals one. We're each a half. We're each lacking. And if we can fuse together correctly, then we'll be one. But it's not that I'm a whole and she's a whole and together we'll get a bigger whole of two. It's that neither one of us is whole. I'm not a whole and she's not a whole. And if we're together, then together we'll grow and hopefully we'll become a whole, we'll become a one. As the Torah told us a few weeks ago, that man and woman together make up Adam. Vayikra et shemam Adam beyomi bara'am. God called their name together. Man and woman together became Adam when God created them. That's when God called them Adam. Even though man before woman was created is referred to as Adam, God calling them Adam is only once they are together. one of the things we have to do is to be able to give love on the other person's terms. And one of the things that's key to building a relationship is consistency. Now, consistency means different things to different people. Take two guys in a dorm room in Mahon Meir. They're upset at one another. They argue. They storm out of the room. One storms out of the room. What does the other guy say? Good riddance. In a marriage, it doesn't work that way. If the husband walks out of the house because they had an argument, he might say good riddance. He might say, okay, I need my fresh air. She feels like, bad enough what you did to me, you're walking out on me. Stick around, but we'll talk. If we won't talk about it, you're walking out. One of the worst things a person can do when there's an argument is leave. That's one of the worst things for a woman. Again, we say, we have to be able to give on the other person's terms, not on our terms. One of the worst punishments a person can give someone else is to ignore them. If I tell you I disagree with you, I'm relating to you, but I disagree with you. If I agree with you, I'm also relating to you. But if I ignore you, that's one of the worst punishments you could give any person, and it's tenfold to a woman. Again, that's part of what we owe to the other side, to give on their terms. And not to insult. You know, that's stupid what you just said. That's not nice. There are lines which we should really get used to not saying to our friends, but they're even more hurtful when we say it to a wife. Chazal said that we have to be careful with a woman because she tears easily. We will transgress the prohibition of hurting a fellow man more easily. And we've discussed in the past that this is reflective of how they feel things more deeply. It's not reflective of the fact that they're crybabies. No, they're not. It's that they feel more intently what we feel less intently.
And Hashem's listens to the women more than to men. And Hashem's listens to the women more than she does to men.
Okay. Part of consistency is consistency in intimacy. If there's something that's between a husband and a wife, then it's no one else's information. It's no one else's business. And that also includes not involving someone else in an argument, which, by the way, is something you should get used to when you're engaged. When you're engaged, there'll be thousands of decisions, and very often the parents are going to say, well, what do you say? And you know that you say one thing and she says the other thing, and it's very tempting to talk to the parents and say, well, I say this, but she, your daughter, she disagrees. Talk to her. A couple have to know that we're one unit, and we'll discuss it between ourselves, and then when we speak to the outside world, it's as one unit. Same thing with the kids. Sometimes I'll tell my wife, I want you to give them this treat, because you're the one who told them no on the last treat, so you should be the one to give it to them. Parents have to be careful that, being that we're building something together, so it's not like I want him to be my friend. I want him to appreciate us. And sometimes that means that I have to be the tough one. Sometimes I have to let my wife be the tough one. And sometimes I have to be the one that's giving in. And sometimes my wife should be the one that's giving in. And the guiding light here has to be what's good for the kids. Another thing that people have a hard time with is not mentioning past mistakes. A guy told me that very often his wife goes shopping and forgets a bag of what they buy at the store.
Wow.
So she comes home Thursday night and she says, boy, that was so hard. I just did all the shopping. And they discover she left a bag of meat somewhere. And they have no food for, they have food for Shabbos, but the children's going to be without meat. And the first week, you could swallow it. The fifth week, you're already wondering, can I afford this? Maybe I should do the shopping. One of the things that we owe one another, part of consistency, is not mentioning past mistakes. I'm with you, we're one, we each have our weaknesses, and it's not right to say, well, you know, you've been doing this quite a lot, maybe pay closer attention. If I have a solution, so let me implement the solution. Part of it is respect. And part of respecting and doing on their terms is remembering things that might not be so important to us, such as our anniversary. I keep copies of our bencher from our wedding. They're always handy. I'm not good. You ask me now what day we got married, I don't remember. But I remember to look at the bencher, so I'll have the date. So if you don't remember the date, so keep something handy so you can remember the date.
She doesn't know
I was just wondering whether I should disconnect the microphone. Showing up on time. If we say we're going to be there a certain time, we should be there a certain time. That's part of the consistency we owe one another. And if we're not going to be there, then we should at least call up and say in advance we're not going to be there on time. Cleaning up after ourselves. A wife is not a maid. A wife is not a maid. Guys, did everyone hear that? A wife is not a maid. Right. If you finished eating, then you could do the dishes. You both ate at the table. If she's doing dishes, then you could throw out the leftovers. There's a lot of cleaning up that has to be done after a meal. How you divide the work between yourselves is each couple's decision. But we have to be cool. And part of it is cleaning up after ourselves. No woman gets used to finding half an apple eaten next to the computer. And when she tells us, I was going to get back to that. I know the Europeans are probably looking at me like, what am I talking about? But the Americans, that's...
They don't eat apples, right?
And there's something else which I feel a little embarrassed mentioning, but I think needs to be mentioned. So the Gemara says that sometimes we have to give practical information too. Burping is not something that's very polite. And it's not something to be proud of. The Chinese will worry about China. Right now we're here.
What if we have a Chinese wife?
When she complains that you aren't doing it, you'll do it. Until then, I would assume that that's not what she's expecting. One of the things that we owe another is giving attention. One of the most common questions I get, or statements I get from newly married guys or oldly married guys is, the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, "Al tarbe sicha im ha'isha." Don't speak too much with the woman. So what does she want me to talk to her so much for? Yeah. So the Mishnah doesn't say we shouldn't talk. The Mishnah says we shouldn't be marbe, not too much. And the Mishnah is talking about sicha, idle chatter. And the Mishnah teaches us two things. A, that a certain amount is our responsibility. The Mishnah says don't do too much, seemingly indicating that there's an amount that I am responsible to do. As much as is necessary.
I don't understand. Are you not allowed to talk with your wife?
You're allowed to talk with your wife. You're supposed to talk with your wife. But there is talk which is pointless talk. And it's really not to any purpose. Did you see the neighbors just put in new grass? And did you notice that the price went up in oil in Uzbekistan? And you could just talk about that, but hopefully you're going
to
be more productive with your time. There's nothing wrong with it up to a limit. Chazal told us, a woman would rather you make $10,000 a year and spend nine times as much time with her talking, just being with her, then make $90,000 a year and spend 1 hour or a tenth of the time or a ninth of the time with her or just talking. So God built them, made a built-in need to spend time with us on things that are not so important, just wandering chatter. And a certain amount a husband owes his wife and the couple should spend doing. But then a person has to know that if he's just going to let it run, then he could spend a lot of his time doing that and being unproductive. And that, Chazal cautioned us from doing that. It can be pleasurable. Most people need a lot of time to get accustomed to it. Most husbands don't have patience for it. That's why husbands will sit over breakfast with a newspaper. Yes, dear. Yes, dear. Sure, dear. Anything you say, dear. Now, what did you say, dear? It's very tempting to do that. But it's far more rewarding if a person takes the time and gives the attention, and then a person will find himself connecting to the other person. If we only can connect on our terms, which means, come, look at what I just built. I'm considering buying this. That's male. We're goal-oriented. So then we won't connect with our wives. Women's conversation, as we've discussed many times, is not goal-oriented. The purpose of the conversation is that we're conversing, that we're together. I'm not going over this because I think most of the people were here for classes that expanded on these concepts. this is an offshoot of that, so I'm not expanding. We had whole classes on the concept of talk for men and talk for women and the purpose of talk, etc. But tonight, I feel like you guys are, sorry, you're the minority here. Chazal tell us, and we're going to end with this last point, that part of what God built into women is that women miss their husbands more than a husband misses his wife. And the missing of the husband begins the minute she knows he's going to leave. It's not the minute he leaves.
Wow.
The halacha says that if a husband knows he's going to leave on Tuesday, then on Monday night he has a biblical obligation to be with his wife in the bed. It's a biblical mitzvah because she needs to feel that affection that he's going to miss her, that he takes advantage of the last night he's with her. She needs that. And if he doesn't give it to her, then he is not fulfilling his duty as a husband to show her that he loves her. And that when it comes time for him to leave, it isn't uncommon that she's going to want to talk to him. Just 1 minute, I just want to talk to you about something. What? That doesn't matter. But one more minute. The second the woman feels that he is departing, that he is separating, she doesn't want it, and she's hurt, and she misses him. Much more than he misses her. And the departure is far more difficult for her than it is for him. And so Chazal said, we as men have a responsibility to be sensitive to that. And that's why it's important to buy souvenirs. If you're going to Chasana, so a souvenir doesn't have to be expensive. We had a class on this. But the price is not what's important. The thought is what's important. If a person went somewhere and he brought back a flower that he picked, he said there were very special flowers here, that's enough. He's shown that he's thought of her. If a person went to a wedding and they threw special candies and he picked up a candy and said, you know, I was there and I missed you and I thought of you, so I brought you back this candy, he's given a tremendous message. He doesn't have to purchase something. He has to show that he has thought of the other person. And part of that is calling during the day. The person's out all day. Even if he's in yeshiva learning, you're taking a break for a half hour, you could call. It could be an SMS. No. What? Yeah. Why is it creepy?
Isn't it call all the time? Why not? Why do you want some space, you know?
There's giving some space, and then there's touching base, saying hello, how are you doing? How's your day going? It's two different things. I'm not talking about putting in a hidden video camera to see who walks in and out of the door. I'm talking about calling once a day and saying hello. Hearing how you're doing, showing that when you're at your end of the day, you're thinking about where she is at her end of the day. The Gemara says that women, they don't have mitzvah of learning Torah like men. Men, when they're going to come to the world to come, they're going to get schar for learning, they're going to get schar for teaching. The woman, what's she going to get schar for? For waiting up for her husband to come back home and for agreeing to send her children out to go learn. She sends her children out to learn. That's what's difficult to her, to send them out. To agree that her husband is away learning Torah. She wants him to learn Torah. She wants him to go, but it's difficult for her. She misses him. So the schar that she gets is for overcoming that difficulty.
And she also cooks